Welcome to the Stabbin' Stylists Podcast. I'm Randa.
And I'm Ashley.
We are just two stylists who love true crime and hair, and we're going to tell you about both.
This is a true crime podcast. These stories may be disturbing to some. Listener discretion is advised. Quick hair fact, get your hair cut every 6 to 8 weeks. It's not going to grow if you don't cut it, because then everything you grow will break off the end. Take that as someone who needs a haircut.
Trigger warning, this episode contains graphic crime.
One of our Instagram listeners brought this story to us, and I had never heard it before, so I am very excited to tell this one. We're going to talk about twin sisters named Denise and Deborah, but we're going to call Deborah Debbie. And they were born in 1961, but they actually moved to Cleveland, Tennessee in the early 1970s. Denise, great student. She had lots of friends. She played the flute in the band. She was so involved, had just popular girl, right? Debbie took an opposite path. Debbie hung out with a real rough crowd. She got involved in drugs, and she just quit showing up to school. And every time the police would bring Debbie home, their father had Debbie's back. It's okay. Don came to her rescue. Don's their dad's name. And this made Denise hate Debbie. She really resented her for that because she worked so hard.
Never got praised.
But her sister, the just town fuck up.
Could take a dad's shit. Dad's always be like, oh, it's okay.
Exactly. So this got so bad that the twins would literally get into physical fights at school. So in 1981, Denise starts working at Blockbuster in Cleveland, Tennessee. And that's where she met Aaron Smith. His name was Jonathan Aaron Smith. He was actually born in Cleveland. His parents raised him and his brother. And Aaron was a class clown. He was loving, adventurous, bubbly, happy, all around nice guy. So after a year of dating, they get married, and Denise's mom just unexpectedly dies of a heart attack. So this gets even more in between the twins. Debbie moves up to New York, and those two, they don't speak. Aaron and Denise start their family together, and they have a daughter, and then they have a son that's born with Down syndrome. In 1991, Aaron's parents were up in Gatlinburg, and they saw this place called the Camp Wright Acres that was for sale. And they were retired, so they were like, you know what? This is a great supplement to the income. Aaron can move up here with us. They can live on the property. It's awesome. So Aaron and Denise lived in the house on the back of the property. Yeah. And a little bit across the way, Aaron and his dad built his parents a house there. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, Aaron becomes an ordained minister. And he starts having a small church service on Sundays at the campground. And Denise starts getting real bored. So she gets a dental assistance job about 30 minutes away in Sevierville. So by 1995, they've been living there for 4 years, and they started having problems. She didn't like living the campground life. That was not her thing. According to her daughter on the Snapped episode, the position she had taken at the dentist's office wasn't good for her because multiple of the other hygienists were having affairs with patients.
Ooh.
Denise, already bored, not really liking her life, you know, falls in, and she starts having an affair with one of her patients. One day, she's going to meet her boyfriend and gets in a little fender bender accident. And they have to call her husband, and her husband, you know, he has to come pick her up, and he figures out what's going on.
It's like, why are you in this part of town?
Exactly. So he tried to make it work.
Ain't you supposed to be at work, girl?
Right. What are you doing here? So he had tried to make it work a long time before that. Stuff had not been good. And at this point, he's like, yeah, this can't go any farther. So he moves across the campground in with his parents. Right after the divorce, Denise comes forward to sue him, a countersuit on him, saying that he abused her and the children and had them come remove him and the rest of his stuff out of that house. So he's not even allowed back at that house. He's got to stay across the campground with his parents. She went as far as to present drawings to the court depicting abuse that she said that her daughter had drawn. And after they talked to her daughter and kind of figure it out, they realized that Denise had drawn these drawings and they throw it out. They
forensically interview children.
And that's what they do. They figure out it's, you know, and I think they even said that like the features were not for her age. She was only like 10 at the time.
Yeah, it was like beyond her ability.
Right. At that point, she stops giving Aaron custody. She's not even letting him come get the kids. So they put out a warrant for her arrest. He goes to retrieve the kids one day and sees Denise driving out of the park with the kids in the back of the car. Well, several days later, after he never hears back from them, he calls and he files kidnapping charges. Yeah. And they put out a warrant for custodial interference for her. So July 23rd, 1997, Harry Smith, Aaron's dad, left around 4:20, and Aaron was not at the home at the time when he left.
Okay.
He returned at 6 p.m. to find a shoe sitting on a little rock wall. So as he came up the walkway, he saw Aaron's body lying on the sidewalk outside of the house. He got out of this truck and he went into the house to call 911, and he saw someone had completely ransacked the house. The drawers were empty. I mean, it literally looked like someone was like pulling out looking for someone.
Pulling and dumping.
Exactly. So he made very sure not to touch anything and went outside to wait for the police. And as he was waiting for the police, he saw on the side of the building the air vent was off, which was weird to him because when he lived in Florida, that's where he hid his money. That's not something everyone would know. So Aaron was about 14 feet from the door. He was laying face down on the walkway of the cabin, and he was in a pool of blood. He had been shot in the ear, the back, and a fatal wound to the back of his head. Harry knows that he owns a pistol. He goes to grab it out of the garage, and it's gone. He confirmed that there were three watches that belonged to him and a lot of his wife's jewelry that was missing. Uh-huh. And there was a silver pair of handcuffs found on a chair in the living room that were not his, were not his wife's, were not his son's. So as they began to canvass the campground, they find witnesses that saw a white sedan with two strangers at the house around 5 p.m. And then also people that had heard what they thought were gunshots at the same time. So when the investigator sat down with his parents, they were like, listen, there's only one way in and out of this campground, and you would have to know the code at the gate to access the campground. They're also like, hey, by the way, they're in a real bad custody battle, and his ex-wife has been missing with their kids for days.
And he just filed a report on her.
As they're talking to his parents, Denise calls the house. The dad immediately hands the phone to an investigator that's like, hey, we need to talk to you because Aaron, you know, was dead. No reaction or emotion to finding out that her husband was dead. They say, listen, you need to get here now with those kids. We need to talk to you. And she's like, yeah, I'm on vacation. We're just in Florida on vacation. We'll come back up there. 4 days later, she finally comes back to Sevierville without the children. They immediately take her into custody as soon as she comes in. And they're like, listen, we're not letting you go until you provide the kids.
Yeah.
You stay here until then. So she called her aunt and uncle and they brought them up there. The children were released to Aaron's parents. So the oldest daughter was 10 at the time. And as the grandparents start talking to the granddaughter, they're realizing that the police need to talk to her. She might not have been here when this happened, but she had some very crucial details. She tells them that 2 days after her father received custody of them, Denise and their grandfather, Don, told them that they were going on a trip. They loaded them up and drove them to Miami, where Debbie and her boyfriend, Alex, flew down from New York to meet them at the motel. Denise's sister, that she hates so much, just randomly flew from New York to Miami to spend time with her sister. So Brittany told them that Denise rented a car the day that they got there and that Debbie and Alex left in it and didn't come back till the next day. That night, she was laying in a little pallet in the floor, and Alex accidentally stepped on her and woke her up. But he did not know that she was awake. And that's when she heard Debbie telling Denise, "It's done. We hurt him pretty bad." To which Alex replied, "No, we killed him." And Denise says, "Was it easy?" And Alex replied with a laugh. She said before she saw them leaving the car, she saw handcuffs in Alex's pocket that he did not have when he came back. But when he did come back, he had on her grandfather's gold nugget watch. Debbie was wearing her grandmother's very distinct pink diamond ring. They find out that the Postal Service is also interviewing Aaron because a week before, on July 15th, there was a package that was delivered to the post office with Aaron Smith's name on it. Mm-hmm. And they coincidentally, at the same time, got a call that said, "Hey, that package has drugs in it." What they did was they had an undercover officer go and present Aaron with the package. And when he opened it up, there was just a trace amount, tiny amount of cocaine in there. And he's kind of like, "What the fuck is this?" And there was a little note in there that says, "Next time it will cost more." So pretty quickly, he's like, "Listen, this is what's going on with my ex-wife." And they're like, "Yeah, this doesn't make any sense."
Yeah, she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, clearly. Like, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if this was another thing for her.
They had sent off the label and the envelope it came in to the crime lab. And right around the same time, they get back the test from it. Those fingerprints on that package that was mailed from Miami were Debbie's fingerprints. So at this point, they're kind of like, okay, this is a lot. They start looking into Denise's financial records, and they found her credit card statements because she was so smart, she even put on her credit card. July 23rd, 1997, she rented a white Buick in Miami. When investigators run the plate on the car, they find the day of the murder, the car was issued a speeding ticket in Madisonville, Tennessee. The picture of Alex Riviera in it that had the name David Riviera on the ID. That's actually Alex's brother. At this point, they're like, okay.
The dots are all
connected. Hold on a second. So they sit down and they talk to Denise's coworkers. And she had actually asked multiple ones if they knew anybody to kill her husband.
Oh my God.
And bragged at a salon to several people that he would never get those children and she would see to it. So by August, they're like, listen, we know what's up. Mailing the drugs was obviously, you were like, okay, this is what's going to happen. And that didn't work the way you wanted it to. So you call up your psycho sister and you're like, hey.
She's still killing.
Yep, that's it. So they put out an arrest warrant for Debbie, Denise, and Alex. They know that Don, their father, is somehow involved, but at this point, they don't have anything to link him to the murder.
He gonna get brought in anyway.
Right. So Denise was located in Cosby, Tennessee, and she was placed under arrest and immediately denied nothing to do with it. Don't know what you're talking about. Took my kids on vacation. Give me a lawyer. Debbie was living with a new boyfriend in New York City. August 22nd, the TBI and the NYPD took her into custody, and her boyfriend revealed to police that she had actually discussed the burglary, showed him the jewelry. Her first response was to blame Denise. Nope, it was all Denise. It was all Denise. They're like, hey, there was a speeding ticket, so we know you were here. Mm-hmm. So you need to give us more than that. So she said that she and Alex borrowed the car and they were traveling to Michigan. And they just so happened to stop by Tennessee and that Alex wanted to teach him a lesson because of all the abusive stuff. So Debbie used Denise's gate card to go inside and to show him where Aaron lived. She says that he drove her back to Gatlinburg and left her at the Ramada Inn and was like, I'm going to be right back. I just want to talk to him and we'll see if he wants to fight someone besides women and children. So Alex returns a couple hours later and he's all upset and pale and that he said that he had went back and he had entered through the garage. And as Alex was going through the house, he had found several guns and that Aaron returned home and unexpectedly surprised him. So he had to shoot him and he shot him 3 times, ran back in, staged the burglary, threw the handguns in the woods, and then left. So after tracking down flight records, they learned that Alex had flown from Miami to New York and was moving his location often. He was not staying in one spot. And it took them a year to find him. They took him into custody and he said, same thing. No clue what you're talking about. Same thing. Hey, we have the speeding ticket. I went and talked to him, but he was still alive when I left. So, and Dawn involved everything. He was like, I was just in Florida with my grandkids. I don't even know what's happening. During the trial, Denise and Debbie were put on trial together. And Brittany actually testified against them. And it was obviously all circumstantial evidence. So without her testimony of hearing them talking about it that night, they would have had nothing on these people. And I mean, they eventually would have found it. But I would say she really expedited the process. Yeah. The daughter actually said that Debbie wanted Denise's approval so bad she would do anything to get it, even this. And the whole time through the entire trial, both women said they were innocent. There was actually a man named Vernon that testified that he and his wife own a campsite at the Camp Red Acres. They were walking to the pool, and around 4 o'clock that afternoon, they saw two people sitting at a picnic table and could see one was blonde and wearing shorts that described Debbie. As they were leaving the pool, they noticed someone that was knocking on Harry Smith's front door and they just said it looked like a man, but we couldn't really tell very close. Yeah. They go back to their trailer, and they heard what thought was 3 gunshots, but still didn't really think anything about it. And the only reason they even noticed it or knew what time it was is because they were walking to their neighbors for dinner. So this really helped to set in stone that these were the people there. This is what happened. There was a woman named LaShawn Taylor, and she testified that her and Alex Riviera have a son together and they lived together in Miami while all this was going on. And she had met Debbie that summer. Debbie and Alex, you know, went off for a little bit. And the next time she saw Debbie, Debbie came to her house in a white car. And Alex says to her, you need to get this fucking car out of here. What are you doing? So she said the next, like, few nights later, Debbie came and stayed with them. And during the stay, Alex and Debbie kept going out to payphones and calling Debbie's dad, like, incessantly all the time calling her dad. And at the end of 2 days, she took Debbie to the airport and she was gone. Didn't see Debbie anymore, but Alex had a couple items, including a Noah's Ark bracelet, that he asked Miss Taylor to pawn for him. Well, right after her came the pawn shop employee who showed all the stuff. It was a Nikon camera, 2 women's freeform rings, a gold Noah's Ark bracelet, and a pocket watch, all of which belonged to the Smiths. So Debbie's boyfriend, Martin, the one that had kind of ratted her out whenever they came to get her, he testified that they had previously lived together before this happened, and she had actually even asked him to kill Aaron. He testified that while she was living in New York in 1997, she was constantly using the payphone to call her sister and her dad, and she told him one day just randomly out of the blue, it's finally done, Aaron's dead. And he said that Debbie told him that her and her dad had paid killed someone to kill Aaron. He, at this time, leaves and was like, what the fuck? And when he comes back, that's when all the police are there, arresting her. All of the jewelry that he said she had showed was all in the apartment. So there was plenty of evidence against all of them. They were both the sisters, were sentenced to life in prison. Mm-hmm. Brittany also testified at Alex's trial, and he was convicted of first-degree murder, also sentenced to life in prison. The sisters will be eligible for parole in 2048 and him in 2049 when they're in their 80s. Denise has actually tried multiple times to get let out early, and she's been denied every time. Their dad was only arrested for being an accessory to custodial interference and got probation.
He only got probation?
Because they couldn't ever link him to do anything with the murder. Other than that one guy saying that he helped pay, there was nothing that would link him to it. So Brittany lives with his parents and with Aaron's parents.
And grows up.
Yeah. Is that not wild?
That's crazy.
That's a short one, but that's like America's dumbest criminals.
Well, I just feel so bad for Aaron because literally there is no reason that man had to die.
And his daughter loved him so much. I mean, he genuinely seemed like a great dad. That is the story of Denise and Deborah Graham, the killer twins of Cleveland, Tennessee.
They suck.
Don't whistle in the woods at night.
Bye, y'all.